Blog Talk Radio.
Oh my God, that's a giraffe!
Sir, you can't keep that
jumped on for you today.
Okay, we're on the air. V-Spot Radio. I thought I made that off the intro, but it was, I kind of messed up when I made the show earlier today. I made it for next Saturday, and you know, and I find it's hard enough to get guests. I try to pull my gum hooked. So, Neil, how are you doing?
All right.
Okay, that was worth a big pause. So we're just discussing the Mario games at the moment. We're planning on doing a big Mario show later, maybe next week. Today I'm supposed to be speaking to a writer, editor from Pro Wrestling Illustrated. I talked to him a few minutes ago. I imagine he'll be in a minute because I think our clocks are off just by a minute or two. Okay, there he is. Bill, I'll catch you later. Hello.
Hi.
Hi, how are you
doing? How's it going? I'm all right. This is Mike Bessler.
Okay, so right now, are you an editor of Pro Wrestling Illustrated, or are you just a writer?
I'm a writer for Pro Wrestling Illustrated, yes.
Okay, I guess the first thing I'd want to ask today is, because recently I just started collecting old wrestling magazines again. I have actually a pretty full run of Pro Wrestling Illustrated from 1988 to 94.
Okay.
Okay, anyway, I've just been interested in it. Now, you said you were talking to Stu Sachs because I was asking some questions, and you said you got in contact with him?
Sure. I've been a contributor to PWI since 2009. I've been a wrestling fan for about 30 years, but Stu and I, I run the PWI Twitter as well. So Stu and I correspond pretty regularly. You know, he serves as the editor on a lot of my articles these days and things like that. So yeah, I talked to him a little bit, shared with him some of the things you were interested in talking about.
Okay, and I am very interested about the state of Pro Wrestling Illustrated today, and it's place on the wrestling landscape. Just some of these questions I've been wanting, because I was curious, because some of these questions about the magazines I think would give a better view to some wrestlers' place in the history.
Yeah.
Okay, so one thing I was curious about, who were some of the wrestlers that were considered draws to be on covers in the early 90s and late 80s?
Well, I mean, first of all, from a historical standpoint, I don't know if many people know this, and I didn't actually know it till I started doing a lot of the Twitter work, and a lot of people were getting, like you said, interested in the history of the magazine again. PWI on our website, which is pwi-online.com, has the entire history of the flagship magazine, Pro Wrestling Illustrated, in cover format, you know, so you can go through from 79 on to today and look at all the covers from, you know, many decades past, which is a really cool thing to be able to do. And I mentioned to Stu that was one of your interests. First of all, the PWI offices, which I went to last year, they're in the Philadelphia area. One of the most memorable covers is actually in huge, it's not quite poster, it's this really thick kind of a placard type thing. It's on the wall, and it's a classic kind of golden age of WWF Hogan cover. And obviously, he's one of the big names just because of how huge wrestling was back then. And if you look back through that historical archive, you can see just by virtue of the fact of how many times some of these guys appeared, who sold more magazines. Because you're going to put on the magazine who sells. It's true even today. Like,
right.
You see a lot of Cena covers and stuff like that for obvious reasons. But Hogan, Flair, there are an awful lot of Randy Savage covers out there. Warrior, Rick Steamboat, Lex Luger, Sting. And that's true also for the Pro Wrestling Illustrated family, because, you know, I don't know how many off the top of my head magazines were published in that family, but we're not just talking about, when you talk about history these days, it's Pro Wrestling Illustrated in a couple different formats.
Right.
The print media has changed a lot, but Inside Wrestling, The Wrestler, there were a couple others off the top of my head. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was just going to mention there was Wrestling Superstars. That was bi-quarterly. or it was quarterly, yeah, come out every 2 months.
Mm-hmm. There's the Digest, and I've got a couple of them up on as kind of wallpaper for our Twitter feed. I'm just going to pull it up here because maybe it's just I'm excited to talk to you, Victor, but there's a couple of them because I've got one of those kind of decent collections too, and there's a couple of them from back then. Some of them repackaged some of the more classic content, and let me think. I got it here. There's one. It's just kind of sticking in my brain here. It'll come to me eventually, but I count off the top of my head from kind of the heyday, four or five different titles that were coming out. PWI was a pretty decent powerhouse back in the day.
Yeah,
we're still around though. What's that?
No, I was just going to mention there was Wrestle America.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was one that came out in the 90s, because, I mean, I used to live and breathe by these magazines. That was pretty much the beginning and end of my month.
Yeah, and it's funny, too, because, I've gone from being a young wrestling fan sitting on the floor of the county market in Lexington, Kentucky, where I was from, reading these on the floor there to writing for the magazine. And that's just a really big thrill for me. Like you said, I mean, there's so much that goes into these, and that used to be pre-internet for older guys like you and me. This was the way to find out about what was going on in different territories. Sports Review Wrestling. That was the title that I couldn't think
of. Yeah, that one went away, I think, in like 95. That was one you rarely saw. For some reason, it didn't seem to have as much new standprint penetration.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was really rare to see Sports Review Wrestling on the newsstand.
Right, right.
Yeah, so that was one of the things I was trying to find out. And again, people don't really appreciate the role the magazines have, but if you're really trying to catch the landscape, and again, the Meltzer newsletter, that is important too, but it helps you get a part of the picture, but you really need the newsstand magazine, especially PWI, because really the other newsstand magazines weren't as good.
If you look now, though, if you pay really close attention, and I think it's the kind of thing that a lot of people take for granted, or it's just kind of background noise for people who are looking for certain things, for people who have grown up with the current product. But if you look and you know the history of it, then you see how important PWI is, and you see how it's worked into the fabric. And can I give you a couple of examples of things that I've picked up on here in the last year or so? WWE, for example, did a History of WrestleMania DVD. I don't know if you guys saw that. It's a great DVD, and Stu Sachs is one of the people who's interviewed throughout the presentation. It was funny to me also to read reviews of that online, because I reviewed it for the magazine, but to read reviews of it online, I actually saw a couple people say, I didn't think Stu Sachs was a real guy. I thought it was just, somebody else, this or that person, writing under some kind of pseudonym or something like that. But evidently WWE thought highly enough of what PWI contributed to the industry to bring Stu in and have him talk about WrestleMania as an institution and in a historical context. There were, I saw recently, I don't know if it was on, might have been on the History of the Steel Cage Match, or that Steel Cage Match that WWE put out. Matt Stryker was doing commentary over an old Bruno Sammartino match, and he talked about how important PWI was pre-internet days. I heard Beth Phoenix on a Colt Cabana interview talk about how when she would go over to her grandmother's house, who I think she was Polish, she would have on her coffee table copies of PWI, the new issues of PWI, and so that's how she grew up with the sport. So it's still there for people, not just in our generation, but doing Twitter and social media, you can see younger fans reach out to it now and embrace it as well. And that's really cool to be part of that.
Everybody knows the bad relationship. I mean, I figure most people, if you're in the history of the magazine, you know the WWF and the magazines had a very confrontational relationship up until about 92 or 93 from the expansion. What is the relationship now with PWI and WWE?
Oh, there's very much a working business relationship, as I understand it. And if you look, I mean, we cover quite a bit of WWE stories now, quite a bit of WWE covers. The inner kind of the front office type workings I'm not intimately familiar with, but if you watch, for example, when Randy Savage passed away, the photo montages that they did, there were quite a few that said courtesy of Pro Wrestling Illustrated. WWE trading cards, at least a few runs here in the last few years, and I noticed this just as a fan or as a collector, to go to the store and get a pack of trading cards that have an old picture of the Funk Brothers or Bruiser Brody, and to see on that side, courtesy of Pro Wrestling Illustrated, I see it's still there. It's clearly still there, and there's a lot of work together. There's a lot of working together, and not just with WWE, obviously the indies, but TNA. PWI still has a pretty good relationship, and I think we're respected as the institution that the magazine still is to this day. You're right that there was... You know, there are some growing pains with business and things like that. And as I understand it, especially talking to Stu, it was a pretty dark period when WWF at the time cut PWI out of the magazine end of things. It's unfortunate, but that's what businesses do sometimes when they're trying to figure out how to work together. I understand from talking to Stu that they had to get creative with how they got photographs and things like that. He mentioned something to me about putting a camera on a pole. He didn't say that he did it, but apparently that was one of the things that they would have to do at shows to get different photos. But they came out of it. They came out of it. PWI came out of it and figured out some kind of working relationship, and that's what's important. That's so everybody can kind of continue to work together and bring some good products to people. I hope that doesn't sound like too much of a PR answer, but that's how I honestly feel just in looking at this stuff. And yeah, in writing for the magazine, it's so cool to be watching a video, whether it's something put out by NWA or WWE or something like that, and to see that courtesy of Pro Wrestling Illustrated, and it's like, well, it's still there. Yeah, we're still there. We're part of it. I'm part of that. And the fans can appreciate that too, because like you said, you know it from a kid, and then you get to relive it again when you see new products that still acknowledge that relationship.
Yeah, I noticed some of the covers, especially because I know when he was talking about getting creative, because you'd see a lot of the Hogan covers, and they'd either be really old photos from like the AWA, or they'd be these tabloid photos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they probably use for another media, and I noticed this now. Did that create an anti-WWF bias in the writing?
Boy, I don't know about that. If I had to guess, I would say if you're talking about things from back in the day, things that were going on at the time, people write in a way that's reflective of what's going on at the time. And I don't know that I would use the word bias. As much as PWI is part of the canon of a sport or of an institution that relies on this thing that you and I know as kayfabe, you can say, yeah, there's that piece of it. But there is a journalistic piece of it as well, and that's something that I've learned from working with Stu and from other with other people too. Covering and stay with me here, because I am answering your question, even though it sounds like I've gone somewhere else. Covering like independent wrestling, for example, I had to cover something recently, and this is just kind of a behind the curtain peek. You know, Stu came back to me and said, "Why did you phrase it this way?" And I said, "Well, I had a reason." It was kind of a controversial thing that had happened in indie wrestling. And he did kind of, you know, there's a teaching relationship too, where he said, you have to be confident about what you're writing. You have to be able to back it up with sources if you're going to report on something, so to speak. So there is a bit of journalistic integrity that goes into things. There's also the responsibility as an editor to write things accurately. There's a responsibility to, just like in a newspaper that sometimes makes political endorsements or something like that, to also include a bit of opinion. And then you got this extra kayfabe thing. That's what makes PWI so unique as a magazine. It's got all of those things in there. If you're seeing something from at the time and you know that there was a background to it, trust what you're seeing, and you don't have to let that color you as you read the old articles. You don't have to let that color your perception, but just take it for what it is. It's a sign of that particular time. And that's really neat to be able to go back and look at those things and to know the historical context of what really was going on, too.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing reading it, you know. And again, it's to put into the context of these wrestling magazines, the writing, and again, they get dismissed, but what you're having to do is you're having to do something from a journalistic take, and at the same time, you're also having to craft a bit of fiction to it.
Right. Well,
you know,
I mean...
And again,
go ahead.
No, I just meant that that's very difficult to do it and have it seem right. And again, I think that's what separates Pro Wrestling Illustrated from the lesser magazines like Wrestling World, which I found one of these old back issues of Wrestling World from like 1991, and one of the articles had something about Nikolai Volkov playing to challenge Hulk Hogan for the title, you know, and it's like this article seemed like it was probably 6 years old and they slapped it in a magazine.
It's funny that you say that too, because I'll go on eBay as a collector, and I'll buy lots, like when I say lots, I mean like an entire lot of wrestling magazines from somebody, even to this day. And most of them are PWI and Inside Wrestling and The Wrestler, because that's what I'm looking for. I like reading the old stuff as a fan. But every once in a while, I will get a different magazine in there that didn't maybe get the circulation that PWI did. PWI is what I read, not as a steady diet, but it's what I was most familiar with. I do see some of the other ones and go, that's different. That's not what I remember, and I don't even know if I would have liked it back then. You know, I'm not giving anybody a hard time that ever wrote for a different magazine or anything, but there is something special about the PWI family that speaks to a lot of people and still resonates with people who grew up on that.
Now, one of the things I was telling a friend about this, that Pro Wrestling Illustrated is probably the largest chunk of wrestling left that is not owned by WWE in the United States.
I wouldn't argue with that. I think that there are some pretty big up-and-coming independent organizations. If you're just talking about media, I guess I'm just talking to you as somebody who's not necessarily as part of that industry, so to speak, but just as somebody who observes a lot of this stuff, I think you're probably right about that. But PWI also, as far as having an international audience, is still distributed in, you know, around the world as well. So there's a pretty decent awareness of the PWI product to this day, and I think that is in and of itself pretty unique as well. Not just that we're still here, but that we're still pretty well known. We see that on Twitter a lot too, like, oh, I remember you guys, I'm so glad to see you're still around, and I really like what you do, and I've got to start looking for the magazine again. So yeah, I think what you're saying is probably dead on there.
All right. Now, one thing I wanted to ask about is, now I know there's digital edition of current PWI, but has there been any move to start trying to digitize the archives?
My understanding is only that there are some select issues that are available actually right now. Some older special issues. I think there are a couple of and PWI is available on Zinio.com. You can actually get to the link to purchase the magazines through our site, the one that I mentioned earlier. And I'll mention it again towards the end. But there are some special editions. I don't know that there are plans to do any kind of mass digital release of the old issues. It's the kind of thing that I think not just writers and fans, but people in the industry would absolutely love. Sparingly, I put some things out there online once in a while, just from my personal collection of here's some good pictures or here's a neat old article, and I'll tag people in it. If there are any plans to do that on a larger scale, I'm not aware of them, but there are some special issues that are already available. And the nice thing is the current issues, which retail for, I think, I don't have one in front of me, $8.99 or
$9.99,
are available on the in digital form for $4.99, which is a great buy if you're just going to sit down and kind of sink your teeth into it and read it cover to cover like a lot of dedicated readers still do.
Yeah, I definitely think there'd be a market for it, because I don't know if you keep up with comics or anything, but Marvel Comics, they have a digital archive service.
Yeah, yeah.
And they have a subscription to it for about, I don't want to be wrong about this, but I think if you pay like $60 a year, you have full access to it. And, you know, and I don't see any reason that Pro Wrestling Illustrated, with all of its archives, would not be a big hit. And, I mean, and even, I don't know if there would be an issue of how much access do y'all have to the back catalog, because it seemed like the back issues would kind of disappear over the years. So I don't know how many, is there a master archive of everything?
I think that's been asked before. I'm not aware of anything like that. I've seen the photo archive, which I think everybody knows is an impressive thing. I know that there are a lot of the older back issues back there. I don't know that something like that is available right now to do, but it's the kind of thing that I think a lot of people, including the current publishers in the magazine, look at and go, sure, there's a market for it. What are the logistics involved in producing it and so forth? But I know what you're saying, and I'm a comics guy myself. I was looking at your website earlier. I've actually looked at it before, but I was looking at it this evening, and I was looking at people you've had on the podcast before. It looks like you've had some pretty impressive comics artists and things like that in recent broadcasts. And so I'm familiar with what you're talking about. What's that?
I'm scoring booking the piss out of people.
It works. I mean,
yeah, if I could apply it to dating, I would be more successful, but I'm just too emotionally fragile.
But yeah, that's cool. And as a comics guy, to go to comic shows and stuff like that, every once in a while I'll find somebody with a box of old wrestling magazines, and at a comic show, it's not like a WrestleFest or something like that. A lot of these guys just want to unload it. So I've gotten some like really good deals from people who got this box of wrestling magazines that nobody else at the show is interested in. And so I can walk out with a decent amount of comics and then a giant box of wrestling magazines, and I'm happy for the day. So
yeah, well, I'll tell you, the thing about the back issues of wrestling magazines are, nobody has a clue of how valuable they are, because I went on eBay, and you'll see people with the 1998 magazine, they want like $30 for them. Then you'll see somebody
right.
with a bunch of 80s magazines, and they'll say like $10. And
yeah,
I probably shouldn't
yeah.
be saying this, but I was in a bookstore, and I got 20 magazines from the 1970s
yeah.
for less than $20.
Yeah, that's a great day too, because even if you've got, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 of them that you've got doubles of, I don't know about you, but I know plenty of people that are more than happy to take those off my hands, and I'm still happy because
yeah.
I got a whole bunch that I don't have in my collection. But that is a funny thing about how wrestling magazines are priced on eBay and at shows and stuff like that. I was like opening the magazines up at shows too, and then going, and see this name in there? That's me. I wrote that. But that's like, I know that's really like egocentric, but again, as a fan, as a lifelong fan, that's really cool to be able to do that.
Yeah, well, yeah, I understand what you're saying. You know, back in December, I talked to Bill Oakley, a writer on The Simpsons, and honestly, it's the weirdest thing, because I'll say, man, I'd like to talk to him sometime. I was like, oh, wait, I did.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it takes you a minute to process it because it seems weird that you even did.
I've had that experience a lot of time in interviewing wrestlers too. I can mention that in a little bit, but even to you know, everybody wants to know if you talked to Hogan, have you ever met John Cena, stuff like that. But if you've been a fan for a long time, that would be great. That would be awesome, but that's not it. If you get to meet with somebody that you were that you followed when you were a kid, that most of the mainstream or just casual fans haven't even heard of now, that's it. That's when it's like a really big deal. And I've got a couple stories about that if you've got time. But you're
yeah,
asking about writing, or
I was going to ask you how you got started writing for Pro Wrestling Illustrated.
It's such a cool story, and to this day I can't believe that it actually happened this way. It's a weird thing, because sometimes I think, well, I don't want to think about this too much because maybe I'll like unravel something in the time space continuum and all these coincidences won't have happened. But I was away from wrestling for a while, because I grew up, I was in Eastern Kentucky, and I think first show my dad ever took me to was like a was one of the Memphis shows we're doing, where one of the Memphis promotions was doing a show up at Marshall University. So I got hooked on it back then, back in the late 70s, early 80s, and was really into Memphis and Poffo's ICW. So Jerry Lawler was my absolute favorite, still is to this day. But then we saw Savage before anybody else in the whole world knew who he was, because that was his dad's promotion. So we lived in Lexington for a while, and then we were came up to Ohio, where we are now. And I watched WWF through the Golden Age, but really kind of fell away from it. And then I missed the whole Attitude Era because of that. I was getting married and going to grad school and other stuff like that. And then one day, it just kind of got back a hold of me, but it was late. It was like 06, 07. And I started watching again and started getting into looking up things on the internet. But I was really, really unhappy with the quality of what I was seeing in what a lot of people call the internet wrestling community. My news feed was full of stuff that I really didn't think was very good, but the people who were writing it thought they were really good. So I started out, I would get on kind of user-generated content wrestling sites and heckle people about their writing. And eventually some of these guys would say, well, if you think you're so great, why don't you start writing? So I started writing like under a pen name, and things actually started going very well. And some of the other guys on this site, we broke away and started our own wrestling site, which ended badly because the three of us weren't ready to really work together. They were great guys, and we're still friends to this day. But in the course of the short, like, 9-month existence of my website, I wrote a critique of Pro Wrestling Illustrated's selection of Triple H as Wrestler of the Decade. And it was, in some cases, kind of obnoxious, but it was. I also gave credit to PWI as the institution as it is, and taking the time to really approach the matter seriously and saying, I don't even know who there would have been as a better choice. And I put the article out there, and we were in the Google News feed, and we had a pretty good readership. And I got a comment from Dan Murphy, who's a senior writer. He probably doesn't even remember that this actually happened, but he just said, thanks, I'm glad you liked the magazine, thanks for reading. And then I got an email from Stu Sachs within a couple hours of this thing being posted, like, you write really well. Would you be interested in writing for my magazine? And by the end of the day, we were on the phone, and it was just so absolutely surreal. He said, obviously you can write. Tell me a little bit about yourself. And we worked something out, and I started writing as a contributing writer, I think in 2009. And it was just so exciting. It's always been exciting just start to finish, but being able to write about things, kind of become part of the canon of Pro Wrestling Illustrated, and doing things like Twitter, being able to put things out there for, like, I think we're close to 12,000 followers on Twitter now, doing the independent roundup and Before the Bell. So it's worked out very well, but it was just such an odd thing that all these different things kind of happened in my life that brought me back to something that I loved so much. And still going strong today, I guess you could say. I still write Before the Bell and the independent roundup. And this is my second year for helping out on the PWI 500 as well, which is coming out pretty soon. So I don't know. I think that's a cool story.
Yeah, that is. I mean, it really is. I was wondering, are there any TNA wrestlers that are draws for the magazine?
Well, I mean, the current issue right now has John Cena and Bully Ray on it. I don't know that one is on newsstands yet. I know that the digital issue is available, and I think it's due to hit newsstands soon. But I think, it's my opinion, that should tell you something about the awareness, the general awareness of Bully Ray as a world champion. AJ Styles, was number one in the 500 a few years ago, which is a really big deal. And it's a really bold choice, too. I think even today, to look back at that, I say, wow, that is a really bold choice, because they are, a distant number two to WWE. What? Obviously, they want to put. Obviously, PWI wants to put people on the cover that's going to sell it. But I'd like to think that people who deserve to be on the cover, who merit coverage, who merit that honor, so to speak, are going to get there at some point, whether they work for WWE or TNA or somebody else.
Well, I'll tell you, going back to 1999, because I can tell you this is about the time I got disenfranchised with the magazine. I don't think I ever quite came back. The 599, they put Steve Austin at number one and Rob Van Dam at number two. And I remember at the time, and I still am, from a kayfabe standpoint, I was fit to be tied. Because, I mean, if you go from a kayfabe standpoint, Rob Van Dam is a clear number one for that, for the August period of August 98 to August 99.
Yeah.
You know, because he was TV champion the entire time. He was a tag team champion the entire time. And he was only pinned once.
And you know, to this day, I can tell. I mean, I can hear it in your voice that's a big deal. It's almost a personal vendetta for you. I hear you. One of my favorite moments with writing for PWI and being part of it was when the 500 came out last year in digital form, and it was our first year on Twitter. And seeing it explode with people who were genuinely angry about some of the decisions that were made. Yes, the name calling and stuff like that that goes with it. People really care about this. And we take that seriously, too, but people really care about it.
Well, I'll tell you, it's funny. A year later, and they must have gotten a lot of angry letters about this, because I remember I got the 500 a year later, you know, and it wasn't magazines necessarily. I was getting kind of disenchanted with wrestling for a short period. But anyway, the 500 came out a year later. Triple H was number one, and when they got to Mike Awesome's entry, they actually mentioned the back of the magazine. They were very happy that Mike Awesome lost the ECW title when he did. Because if he had it, they would have had to have put him at number one or put Triple H at number one and dealt with another shitstorm.
Isn't that great though that is like a snapshot memory for you, that is part of the experience of being a fan, are the 500 rankings. So cool.
I'll be honest with you, I haven't changed much. I was going through the ratings for the 89 magazines, and you know, and I don't know if you know this, if you've been to my other blogs or anything, you know, because we did a big Demolition project. Demolition is my favorite tag team of all time, and
okay.
I was getting mad going to the 88 magazines that they weren't number one.
Okay.
The Road Warriors were. And finally, I was like this, and my test was, I know they didn't put Jim Garvin and Michael Hayes ahead of the road, not of Demolition. I was like, oh, I was right.
Here's my thing, though. I think, all kidding aside, it's thrown around so much on the internet lately. In recent years, it's just become part of the culture to throw around the word marks as an insult. But, I mean, we're all marks at the end of the day. We wouldn't be wrestling fans if there wasn't somebody that we felt that passionate about. You say you're a Demolition fan. I'm a Fabulous Ones fan. To me, that is the beginning and end of tag team wrestling. And I think if you're doing – this is just me now. This isn't somebody writing for PWI. It would certainly color my perception of things if I was going to write this piece, though. If you've got to put the top 10 tag teams of all time, you got to put the Fabs in there, because otherwise I wouldn't take the list seriously. That's me as a fan, but that's me appreciating their role in history, too. I know you can do that with Demolition, too, I have no doubt, because you're so passionate about it. But that's what makes us fans, and I think that's what makes wrestling fans so unique, too, is that ability to go back and forth between what we know to be the true real history of someone and the kayfabe aspect of it. And there are a few things that are going to tip the scale so strongly in one direction or the other, especially if you know that somebody did something absolutely horrible, terrible in their personal life, then you're going to want to maybe not factor kayfabe in at all in your ultimate assessment of them. But by and large, for just about anybody who's stepped in the ring, you can effectively balance that. You can go, yeah, this, but this thing over here, and that's what still makes them so great, or that's what makes them great heels. That's the great thing about wrestling fans, I think. And I personally think that's the great thing about wrestling writers, too, because that's really hard to do when you sit down to do wrestling rankings.
Well, I'll tell you what happened was a couple of years ago, because there were a few years I just wasn't watching wrestling as much. You know, it was personal stuff, but, you know, I got back into it. And me, I watch wrestling now like it's completely real. And to me, I feel like the ultimate conspiracy theory when you die is that pro wrestling was completely real, but they fabricated the story that the matches were predetermined to keep the athletic commissions off their back.
Sure, sure. It's fun to be able to do that, though. Everybody feels smart when they use the term suspension of disbelief, but wrestling fans do that better than anybody else. Anybody else. Comics fans, people who are movie aficionados, wrestling fans do the suspension of belief better than anybody else. I think the fact that you're watching Randy Orton handcuff Triple H to the ropes and get ready to basically murder him with a sledgehammer in front of a packed auditorium of fans who are sitting there not trying to intervene shows you how powerful suspension of disbelief can be. Because if you saw that happen on the street, most people would probably try to do something, or people would be calling the police or whatever. But wrestling fans are going to sit there and watch the drama unfold and appreciate it for what it is.
I don't know. I think I'd let Randy get one or two shots in before I called the call. It's interesting, though, when you read the magazines, because, again, to go back to Demolition, because I like how you can kind of follow things, because when Demolition first appears, Pro Wrestling Illustrated is like, well, these are just a bunch of Road Warrior ripoffs. A year later, is Demolition as good as the Road Warriors? And then a year later, Demolition, best in the world. Have the Road Warriors lost their killer instinct?
Well, especially when there were so many titles out there, you can still do this with PWI to this day. But when there were so many magazines out there, if you go back and buy a batch of magazines now, if you get a year's worth or something like that, you can follow a feud as it evolves.
Yeah.
And that is just the neatest thing to be able to do that. The closest thing to that is I was talking to a wrestler not long ago, and I won't say who it is because he did something really special for me. I don't want a lot of people asking favors from him.
Yeah,
but I had told him privately, like, this match that you wrestled, which is relatively obscure to a lot of people, that I saw when I was a kid in the 80s, made such an impression on me. I haven't seen it for 30 years, but I can still remember it. He sent me a DVD of his archive that captures the entire feud, every promo leading up to this definitive match. And that was like a historical document to me. And PWI is like that too, just on a much larger scale as far as basically the history books for the sport. I mean, we'll call it a sport because it's still a sport to most people who pay attention to what's going on there. So that's the record book. What's that?
People always ask me, is wrestling a sport? I always say close enough.
Yeah. Well, look at the PWI almanac that still comes out annually. That's available on digital form too. That to me is definitive proof that we're talking about a sport here. It's got the records. It's got every piece of history that's relevant to particularly the bigger organizations in the sport, title history, stuff like that. This is kind of living, breathing sport. I don't know how a lot of people choose to make the distinction. Again, that's a business thing for a lot of folks, but to fans, it still is, and rightly so. It should be considered a sport.
Well, you know, the thing is, when you look at real sports, and again, I've gotten this argument before, people get mad, but if you look at it, you know, there's no real pure sports. I mean, you could look at, you know, basketball used to change its rules to make the game move faster. You know, and like a UFC won't give guys title shots if they don't think they're a draw.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
I mean,
you could draw that comparison out to reality television today too. It's how much of what you see on reality television is staged or has the outcome predetermined, but still has some very real moments. Wrestling to me is about as real as it gets, and I think you and I probably preach into the choir to a lot of wrestling fans who are going to listen to this. But it's a very real kind of a personal affinity to have to pro wrestling.
Well, I think that, you know, and I don't want to be bitching too much on here, you know, but one thing you'll notice if you ever will on message boards or anything, there's a lot of self-loathing wrestling fans.
Sure, sure. I wish it wasn't that way, too. I really do, because a lot of wrestling fans are very perceptive, very particular, very articulate, and I think that's unfortunate that people have to kind of hide away. One of the great wrestling documentaries, I want to say, is it Beyond the Mat? Where the guy is actually, he's had some pretty serious projects and things like that in the past that have led him up to this point, but he starts out with kind of this true confession, like, I love wrestling, and here's why I love it. And it's almost like he's getting out this kind of cathartic thing about this dirty secret, but it's a real thing. It's a multi-million dollar industry. Why be shy about it? Even though there's plenty of things in wrestling that embarrass us as fans, that's true for so many other things, too. So why be shy about it?
One thing I was going to mention or ask you about is that I think one thing CWI, the family magazines, don't get credit for is I think they really helped ECW develop over the few years because they were my only outlet till 96. So by the time I got ECW, I was pretty much, you know, foaming at the mouth for it.
Well, part of the history of the magazine, I think, that's important to note when you look at something like that is that Paul Heyman was a photographer for PWI, and in fact, I think Stu within the last few months, tweeted an old magazine cover that has a very young Paul Heyman kind of caught off to the side, if I'm not mistaken, holding a camera. Stu even did a close-up of him to show, hey, you know, he used to work for us. And Joey Styles was an intern for PWI,
yeah, I remember that.
Which was based out of Philadelphia. When I went to the front office last year, that's what I call it, by the way. I don't know. I'm sure Stu's going to listen to this, and that's why I keep calling it the front office. But that, to me, going up there, that's what it was to me. I remember in somebody's cubicle there was a vintage ECW poster up there. I don't know if it was from one of our family of magazines or if it was from ECW, but it was an original item. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with acknowledging that, yeah, there's some history there that definitely overlaps. And if that is to PWI's credit, that ECW got more exposure, then that's nothing but a compliment as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I love ECW. I always say, yeah, I mean, I can, you know, I always say about this about wrestling or anything, you know, I can appreciate ECW like I can appreciate my dead drunk daddy. You know what I mean? He was a drunk,
sure.
He could be a jerk, but, you know, he was my daddy. He did a lot of awesome things for me.
To me, when you and I were talking earlier about getting to talk to or meet really big names in the business, for me, one of the coolest things was I was backstage at an indie show in Chicago in early 2011. And if you have time, I'd love to talk about the indie scene today. But
we're going to be cut off in a few minutes.
Oh, shoot. Well, I got the short version of it is it was an incredible thrill to meet Shane Douglas backstage. And the man talked to me like he had known me forever. And it was just amazing to hear things just come right from his mouth, and just had a tremendous brain for the business.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I met Shane back in Nashville at a show last August, and I couldn't meet him. And again, it was kind of a disastrous night, you know, which I could probably tell you about that in email or something. But anyway, I waited for about an hour to meet Shane, and he came outside, you know, he shook everybody's hand, he looked them right in the eye. And again, some of the wrestlers trying to get back out to their cars, and that's cool, you know, I understand that. But Shane really went above and beyond. He shook my hand. I told him how long, you know, I live in Alabama, so I had to drive like 3 hours to Nashville.
Sure.
And he really appreciated it, you know. He looked me in the eye. I remember Shane watched every match on that show.
Oh, yeah. I met Lanny Poffo that same night. He was on the same card. And things like that really kind of make it for me, really make this extra special. But yeah, I agree with you about Shane. Was just an amazing person. Is that the same to, you know, to a run-of-the-mill fan of meeting Hogan? No, it's not the same, but it is really special nonetheless.
And, you know, I'll tell you something else he did. I had one of those ECW Jax belts that they made.
Yeah.
And I asked Shane to sign it, and he did not have a silver pen. He searched for 10 minutes to find a silver pen to sign my belt for me.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, and not the, you know, I don't want to say, you know, but Bret Hart, again, I had to wait like an hour in line for him. I ended up puking from heat, you know, and they wanted $20 just to sign the belt that I brought from home.
That's as bad as PWI Diss and Demolition, isn't it? Still sticks in your cross.
I learned later that it was that kind of a standard operating procedure, you know, but it still kind of sucked. It kind of leaves a sour taste in your mouth.
Sure.
Mike, they're about to cut us off in a minute. Listen, if you have a chance, maybe you can come back again some other time.
I'd love to do it. Please follow us on official PWI. We're on Twitter, and check the website out. Look for us on newsstands.